Raya, Hey Raya, Hey Raya, Hey Raya, Hey Raya,
travel up to Standing Rock and speak with a few folks about the current struggle against the Dakota Access Pipeline, or DAPL, where Indigenous people and those allied with them have been in camp since April with the intention of blocking the pipeline from crossing the Missouri River. The Missouri River is the longest river in these so-called United States and is part of a watershed that provides water to the largest swath of land of any watershed in the country. To say that protecting this water is vital is an understatement. The threats posed by DAPL are the same as those posed by the Keystone XL pipeline, or any pipeline, really. The current route proposed by DAPL would cross the Ogallala Aquifer, as well as the Missouri River, in two spots. What we know about pipelines is that they inevitably rupture, and the risk of contamination to the drinking water of millions of people is an unacceptable risk. In the last week, there's been a ramping up of tactics deemed necessary to block the pipeline. On Thursday, October 27th, there was the most intense conflict that had been seen to date, with police and military vehicles burned, barricades erected and burnt, and intense levels of repression from the police. Hundreds of people have been arrested and injured. As time goes on, the charges faced by participants at Standing Rock have become more severe. Red Fawn, an Indigenous woman and water protector, who had been at Standing Rock for months, was arrested brutally and is currently facing attempted murder charges. It was with this ramping up of conflict in mind that I headed up to speak with folks on site. What follows are interviews with two folks, one person from the Red Warrior Camp and one person from IP3, Indigenous People's Power Project. The IP3 camp has been providing direct action training since September, having trained nearly 1,000 people since then. Since establishing their camp and trainings, there has been a clear increase in direct actions, such as lockdowns to equipment that have been seen. In these interviews, you'll hear the background noises of the camp, sometimes the work at hand and sometimes songs and drums in the distance. These sounds are constant across the camps, as the people there are in constant ceremony as well as preparation for the coming winter. You'll also hear a buzzing type sound in the background, which is especially present during the talk with Red Warrior Camp. That sound is the surveillance aircraft that flies over the camp 24 hours a day, often flying quite low and throughout the night. The situation at Standing Rock will continue, and many people up there made clear in numerous conversations that they won't stop fighting this pipeline, nor any more to come. Without further ado, thank you to IP3 and Red Warrior folks for taking the time to talk with me and share their voices with It's Going Down.
Okay, so if you just want to introduce yourself.
My name is Andrew Ironshell. I am an Eastern Band Cherokee, Sichangu Lakota.
Thank you. And then the name of your camp over here?
This is IP3, Indian People's Power Project.
Okay. And then you want to tell me a little bit about the camp and what you guys have been doing out here?
Here at this particular camp, we're really focused on training. So we're trying to hopefully train everybody that comes through the gate. We've trained over 800 people in the time that we've been here so far, from youth to elders, nonviolent direct action, media, you know, how do you frame the conversation about protecting sacred water. For many people, they're not familiar, you know, they're passionate about the issue, water is life. But really, what does that mean and what does entail when you look at the big picture? Really, it's a planet-wide conversation that really needs to be happening. And this is an epicenter for that conversation to happen here at Standing Rock.
Thank you. And how long has IP3 been here at Standing Rock?
We have been here since July, August, around that time frame. We've had several people come and go, which is good. You know, people stay as long as they can and support as much as they can. And there's been a steady stream. Like, for every police officer that the other side's brought in from somewhere else, at least 10, 20 people have came in new to the camp and been through a lot of the training that we provide here.
That's great. So with the last couple weeks in mind, as things kind of intensified on the front lines, what are your thoughts and reflections on those intense actions that happened in the last few weeks?
Well, I'm sure the video and the news media, you know, they sensationalize a lot of what we see on Facebook and what's put out there in mainstream media. But at the end of the day, it's the power of prayer that's really why we are winning this war. And these are small battles that you see on TV and with you know, the violent act of Morton County against prayerful people. You know, that's really powerful for the world to see. But look under that, you know, where does that resilience come from? And, you know, the human spirit coming alive at Standing Rock because of the issue around water and around sacred sites and around, you know, the injustices that historically have happened here are all in play at this time from this place. And really, this is maybe more powerful than what happened at Wounded Knee in 1973, which I just live up the road from. You know, I have family that was there in 73, and then for some of them that have lived this long to see two types of revolution in their lifetime is just phenomenal. When, you know, oftentimes maybe you never have any in the lifespan of a human being. But for people like my dad, who's 87, people like Chief Leonard Crowdog, who, you know, is my uncle and I grew up around in this movement, to see something like this come together and led by young people like the ones in this camp, it's just so, you know, it really sets a good place in my heart about what's happening, going to happen for the next seven generations.
It's definitely beautiful. It's exceptionally inspiring to people.
It is, and especially if you understand where these youth come from. Yeah. You know, we had 25 suicides in 1 year just recently. Yeah. This is suicide prevention. This is life happening here. And for many of our young people at home, they long to come here. Many of them can't be here, so they're showing support in other ways, you know, but they're really feeling a sense of hope in themselves, even if they can't get here, because of what young people are doing here. And I think that's more powerful than anything that's being said in the media, you know, because they don't understand the underlying current of this power.
Yeah. I mean, I live in Denver, and in Denver, this has been exceptionally, like, invigorating for Native youth there who are organizing in big ways around it at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not just a Native American issue. It's a human issue. It's a planet-wide issue. And I think as people can peel back the mainstream media's narrative and really see what's happening here, you know, I would invite more people to come and to join us on the front lines. You know, at the camp, it's very safe. There's, it's not like Wounded Knee in 1890. We have no Gatling guns right at the, you know, the doorstep, but they're definitely here. But the camp is safe, so I would say come, you know, and support us in that way. Settle down for a few days as long as you can, and just support the young people and the elders in this community, the Standing Rock Nation here. You know, it's really opened their heart to the people for this to happen, you know.
Yeah.
And we need to acknowledge them as well.
Yeah. So we know that the pipeline that they've built their drill pad to go under the water.
Yeah.
And with that in mind, how do you see the next few weeks playing out? What are your hopes? Or
I actually believe that in the next 3 to 4 weeks that it may be resolved. President Obama is really looking at alternatives to the pathway that it's currently on. I think that there's a lot of litigation that may be happening around, you know, is the pipeline even in the right place? You know, I think the engineers were a little bit quick to build, and I've heard rumor that, you know, the process of where this is supposed to go is off track. You know, it's out of line from the original route that they were going to take, maybe to decrease construction costs, you know, help with their timeline. They kind of screwed up. And so I think that's a good moment to really bring that out into the light and to let people know that they're haphazardly building this pipeline just because there's people in the way. And that's not just bad for the environment, but it's a bad precedent for industry. And when we talk about, well, let's rebuild America's infrastructure, well, if they can't even build a pipeline right, how are they going to build the rest of America right?
Yeah. Thank you. One last question. There are many different camps here, different approaches, different intentions, but all kind of coming together around, you know, the shared goals, shared vision. So how do you feel like that collaboration is happening? In what ways are you seeing that?
Just the, you know, the fact that people have to come together to stay warm, to feed each other, for this communal environment to be successful, takes of humbling ourselves, you know, surrendering to the spirits and let them lead us. And for many, that's maybe hard to do, but learn from the elders of the Lakota that are here and of the other nations that are here, because they live their life in prayer. They understand that it was prayer that brought us this far. And, you know, 500 years ago, we were under the same fight. And why we're still here is because of that prayerful thought and that prayerful action. Yes, it's not always pretty. Prayer is not always pretty, just like, you know, the lessons in life are not always beautiful and rainbows and unicorns. You know, there's a certain amount of sacrifice and blood and sweat and tears that we as human beings have to experience in this life's time to be true human beings. And this is really a place that brings that out, right? Because you have armed militia around us, you know, really wanting to snuff us out, the same feeling that our ancestors felt, you know, we're feeling. And now it's not just Native people feeling that, but every American should be feeling the pain of this camp, because they're all under the gun, regardless if they want to acknowledge it or not. Even the Morton County officers are slaves to the system, you know, and they don't even realize that. And maybe the ones that do are the ones that walked off the other day and you know, their own civil disobedience against their own system.
And you saw Morton County officers walk off?
I have three children here. They're young adults, and they were on the front lines. They did see officers, you know, turn away, walk off of their line, cry, because people were telling them, would you do this for your children? This is why we're here in this water, knee-deep, you know, getting hypothermia on behalf of our children and our generations. Wouldn't you do that for your mother or your grandmother? And many of the officers, maybe the ones that know prayer, walked off that line.
Maybe one clarifying question that I think would be helpful for people who aren't familiar with when you or other like Lakota people here talking about this being a prayerful type of action. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about prayer, it's very different than I think a lot of people who've grown up in like Judeo-Christian environments of as prayer.
Yeah.
So could you explain a little bit more of what you mean by that?
I think in an indigenous perspective that the word prayer and the word action go together. That it's just not an idle event that happens every Sunday so I can feel good about myself. You know? That it's really a walk of life, and that walk of life, if you're walking in prayer, does mean a life of action, because in that prayerful thought, you will be, you know, you will help your mother, you will help your father, you will help your neighbor. And that's really the underlying root of all indigenous thought around prayer and around well-being, but that's also a value system that other denominations have, but not everybody lives it. Not everybody walks it 7 days a week. And I think that's happening here in this camp.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking a couple of minutes with us. I really appreciate it. So if you just want to introduce yourself and then talk a little bit about Red Warrior, how long y'all have been here.
Okay, so I'm a member of Red Warrior. I've been here for the better part of 3 months, and I was called here. I answered a call to come and defend water from some of the Oglala matriarchs, which is a very similar story, I think, to a lot of folks here in this camp in particular. There's elders in the camp that have, elders and just, you know, different families that have been involved in resistance for generations and decades and since the beginning of time in protecting and defending land and water here.
So a little more than a week ago, last Thursday, there was the camp that had been set up on the treaty land, mm-hmm. And then there was a higher level of conflict than had been seen. Mm-hmm. Up until that point. Mm-hmm. And so with those kind of rising tensions, obviously things here look different than they had before. So with that in mind, how would you describe like the current situation out here?
We're in an extremely militarized battlefield. It feels like, you know, folks trying to get to the other side and trying to escape from this or try to, you know, prevent this horrible drill from going into the land is extremely, it's, you know, I think the intention is to be demoralizing with the amount of surveillance that's happening, just constant airplane and helicopter and drone surveillance. And now there's, you know, the United States military and National Guard and local police enforcement just watching us at all times from this hillside, from closer to the point of conflict, closer to where the drill pad is, closer to where... they have every intention of going under the Missouri River and compromising drinking water for millions of people. So I think this country has known for a really long time the brutality of police officers and of the military when it comes to defending corporate interest and monetary profit. And this is just another example. You know, it's just another situation where people who are even within the laws of this country, you know, doing civil disobedience, because we understand that, you know, the United States is a illegally occupying colonized force that has always had unjust laws, whether it was slavery, whether it was, you know, being allowed to, like, beat your wife and children, whether it was, you know, all the weird shit that's been allowed to fly in this country. You know, people recognize them as being unjust laws, and so they go out against them, and just the reflexive message from law enforcement is always going to be that they're doing their job and they're upholding the rule of law, regardless of any ethical or moral basis that's founded in what's correct and what is our role as, like, human beings on this earth. That's not their concern, right? So we see that, we expected it, and there is an outcry, you know, from Native peoples all over, from allies all over that are watching this and that are horrified, because I think, yeah, a lot of people still are waking up to it. There's a lot of blind trust in law enforcement and in government to do what's right for us, but it's a profoundly corrupt and brutal institution. So we're just coping with that and still trying to, you know, folks here are still completely dedicated to stopping this from happening. And now there's just, you know, guns pointed directly at us, whereas before there was, you know, the threat until we crossed a certain line. But now they're here. They're here at our home, you know?
Yeah. And you had mentioned before already, like, the drill pad is, it's built, it's set up. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have seen, like, drone footage that people mm-hmm. had taken in the last few days, and it really could be any day at this point mm-hmm. that they bore through the ground and go under the water. So with that in mind, where do you where do you see perhaps like the next few weeks going or coming days?
Right, well, I mean, there's a lot of people that have pledged vowed, you know, done ceremony, taken these very serious oaths to protect this water, to give their lives for this water. And, you know, they're not backing down. The government isn't backing down. The corporations are not going to back down. This is what they live off of, is off of, you know, destruction and profit. And there's very serious commitment here. So that will play out in a just ever escalating way. I don't see this being resolved unless, you know, they call off drilling, unless they, you know, a reroute isn't a victory here, but unless they call off unless they plan on a reroute, that's going to happen here. So we'll see, you know. I mean, it's like, it's nothing I can predict. I understand that, you know, there's a lot of energy, a lot of warrior spirits here that are fully dedicated to keeping that from happening.
There are many different camps here and a lot of different intentions or perspectives on tactic or approaches to this particular struggle. And so how do you see like those different camps collaborating? And I think a lot of people, you know, that aren't here, haven't been able to come up here, look at it as like kind of one unit, mm-hmm. but there's actually many different units and different moving pieces going on here. So could you speak to that at all?
Yeah, you know, just everyone has their place. All these different approaches have their place. Just like in a camp or in a home, you know, people, you know, you have to keep your home clean. You have to, you know, make sure that everyone's fed. You have to make sure that, you know, the spiritual sides of things are being honored and taken care of, that there's prayer leading all of this always. And then you have, you know, your folks on the front line who have that fire in them to get out there, and that's all their places. So there's, you know, a place for the elders, and you know, they talk and they advise and they come together, just like there's a place for the warriors where they, you know, come together and share ideas and share experiences, you know, and become stronger with all these different minds and spirits coming into it. Just like there's a place for the children, you know, to remind us what we're doing this for. So there are all these different camps that come from different territories. There's all these different allies that come from, you know, wherever they're coming from, and it's always, you know, it's madness with all these people here to try to keep something functioning and running. But, you know, with the good intentions and with a lot of the skills that people are bringing, there's a lot of, you know, collaboration. There's a lot of last minute collaboration on the front line or in camp where you see people need help, and you know, you follow the advisement of people that, you know, it feels right to in that moment, in that time. So there's definitely a really strong network here that has been forming, and if folks are just plugging in, it's going to continue to grow, you know, for future struggles, because this isn't by any means the last one. You know, there's pipelines that are being approved left and right. So so it's a good learning experience and a good just foundation for everything that's to come, that's just being built off of everyone that led the way for us before this. All the people who were raised here in struggle and resistance are here because of that.
One thing that gets mentioned a lot is that like the basis of people here at Standing Rock is like, is not only elder council, but also like people talk a lot about this being a movement that's led in prayer. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe a lot of people who are not familiar with Indigenous spiritual practice or Indigenous perspective and are more familiar with like a Judeo-Christian idea of what prayer means, that can be like a confusing thing for them to hear. So how would you describe that idea of this being like a prayerful movement?
Well, I mean, just, you know, there's so many different tribes, there's so many different nations, there's so many different ways of praying, of giving these offerings and asking for this guidance. And it's not just like a thing you do, you know, it's not just like you wake up and pray and then brush your teeth. It's about like walking in prayer all day and trying to do things in a good way, and you know, making sure that, like, your actions come from a place where you're going to honor your ancestors and honor all of the sacrifices that they made. So there's not a particular, you know, thing that I can speak of or, you know, give a step-by-step of how to do or anything, of course, right? Like, I don't think that's what you're asking either.
Right.
but I do think that that's... I do think that that's unknown to a lot of people, even, you know, for folks who are removed from their culture and their tradition. So it's, you know, for folks to find those ways and to honor the ways that are being shown to us, you know, by elders and carrying those traditions. So it's definitely not just... it's not just like an activity in the day, you know, and I think that's the difference of when we go out and, you know, do actions and go out and really see this little kid's over here is playing with the axe. I'm like, oh god. But yeah, I think that's a good answer.
Yeah. And then the last one is just, I think there are a lot of people who are interested in what's happening here, are interested in coming, especially as things get closer to a time when a lot of people have off, like around Thanksgiving and the holiday time. What are some things that people who are thinking about coming here should know before they come?
Well, first of all, this is what we talk about. This isn't a place for tourists. It's not a place for visitors. It's for people to come in and engage. It's for people to come in and really work. You know, like, this is work. This isn't a vacation at all. I've been here for 3 months, and I've worked harder than I ever have every day. Like, it takes so much to keep things going. So that's really, you know, for folks who come here to not be a burden in coming in to just take photos or coming in to say they were here, you know, to do that Facebook check-in and post their selfies and all that. That's extremely distracting and time-consuming. When folks aren't coming here with the best intentions or with selfish intentions. So for folks that, you know, that isn't what they see with their time here to come and be as, you know, self-sufficient as possible, to connect with the folks that they want to support directly, who they see are putting in work, and ask, you know, individual people what's needed to sustain things, because it is such a huge camp, you know, and the direct support is extremely helpful, whether it's, you know, some of the elders needing stoves for their teepees, or us needing tactical gear, you know, like, they confiscate our radios, our binoculars, shoot down drones, all that stuff has to be replaced. So, you know, if there's folks that are communicating with camps particularly to get, you know, some very specific lists that are quality over quantity, because we get a lot of, like, throwaway people cleaning out their closets and just bringing stuff that's not useful, especially with this climate and at the point that we're facing. So it's really for folks to understand that they're stepping into what really feels like a war zone, and to really ask themselves if they're prepared for that. And if not, then, you know, then there's ways they can support from afar. There's all these fundraisers they can contribute to. They can, you know, try to help indigenous folks come out here. You know, for every ally that comes out here, you should be bringing an indigenous person to come and be a part of this. So those are, and like I said, like, everyone does have their place in this. If they want a place in this, there is a place. It doesn't always have to be here. It doesn't always have to be on the front line.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
thank you.
Super appreciate it.
We want to encourage folks to check out the social media updates from Red Warrior Camp for more information. You can find them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For more information about IP3, you can head over to their website, ip3action.org. Fundraising efforts are still in full effect. As winter approaches and the Black Snake comes ever closer to boring its way beneath the Missouri, the funds raised are vital to continue this fight. Please be sure to check out Red Warrior Camp's GoFundMe page. Finally, we want to encourage people to take very seriously the calls to action. If you cannot make it to North Dakota, you could do more than just make donations. You can take to action in the streets, on the railways, at the banks, and corporations that are funding DAPL. The fight isn't just on the prairie, and if this battle is lost, it won't just be the Lakota people who suffer the consequences. This is a fight against capital, against the pipeline, and its world. Fuck the pipeline.